Hi, you're listening to Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devery. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Hey, Creeps, I'm Laura, and with me tonight, I have illustrator Dylan Jacobson. Dylan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Dylan, you actually did some artwork for us. You did the weird news art, which we love. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. It was really fun to work on. It's always crazy the different kind of things I get to partake in. And I was excited that you welcomed me to work on that. So it was a really cool way to like start a professional relationship. And that's fun.
Yeah. Well, we actually met at Van Meter. I had spoken there and you had done the artwork for the poster that year, right?
Yeah, I did a poster and their t-shirt for last year. I'm not sure if there's anything new going on this year. I'll be perfectly honest with you, but we'll see. I'll let you know as soon as I know.
Yeah. So tell us how you got interested in illustrating. Have you always been a creative child, or was that just something you picked up as you got older?
That's a challenging question. I mean, I did draw a lot as a kid, and I think a lot of people like draw and doodle and stuff, but I didn't really think about it professionally until really late in high school. I didn't think I really wanted to go to college, but I wound up going anyway. And I picked a school that I thought I could become an animator at. I wound up focusing more on graphics. And then I bounced from there and went and focused on filmmaking. And so I've done a lot of things, worn a lot of different hats, but one of the through lines in all of that was things like storyboarding and figure art. And so I've tried to carry as much of that forward as possible. Storyboarding really led into me making comics, figure art. I still do a lot of that stuff. And I've always had an enthusiasm for monsters and things that go bump in the night, especially like cryptids and things like that, that have a little more grounding in our world. And that's sort of how we got to know each other.
Yeah. So cryptids, was that something that came later on in life, or did you grow up with legends or anything like that?
I grew up with, I grew up in South Dakota, and I can't remember the name of all those like travel guides, but the ones that would tell you like where the haunted things are, there's like two things in South Dakota. Right. It makes you feel like there's nothing going on there.
Spooky. Yeah.
And I latched on to shows like The X-Files. I was really more in, due to my age, I was really more into like So Weird on Disney. If you ever watched that, it was like X-Files for kids.
Yeah.
that really gripped me. Honestly, from a folklore perspective, a lot of those things were interesting to me. I was the kind of kid who checked out books that were like bisecting dinosaurs. And so like any sort of thing that could be a creature was interesting to me. And I think it was a lot more of my my like formative years that had me interested in like monsters and folklore. I don't have it anymore. But long ago, when people were making like goofy little free websites like Angel Fire stuff, I had one on like monsters and monster sightings.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Like just locally, or did you, you know, were you all over
the
place?
I had the spirit of all over the place, but it was pretty much just my friends interacting with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that in forever. So a little like almost embarrassing slice of
I love it,
my adolescence.
So I think I'm a little older than you, but I grew up like just checking out books in the library, like Bermuda Triangle and Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. Like that was basically all I had. So that was like my gateway into all the weird stuff.
Yeah, I've found my interests skew a bit older than me. I'm 35. Okay. And so I've been interested in things that I sort of encountered on like reruns that really impacted me. And so like I'm aware of shows like In Search Of, but they weren't relevant to me. I was watching them on, I don't know, whatever channel it is that that was airing them in reruns in the early to late 90s, but a lot of that stuff was fascinating to me. And there's a sense of like, and I still struggle with this with my perception of things, but when I see like film from the 60s, mm-hmm. it can often feel like it's 100, 150, 200 years old. It just seems so old. It feels like these things are a lot more archaic than they might actually right. be. And I think part of that interested me a lot more is to like, there's this sort of world of like Super 8 cameras capturing mm-hmm. footage and stuff. That like a lot of that's gone now and it feels right. so foreign. And a lot of that really intrigued me as a kid.
Yeah. So how did you design the Van Meter flyers and all that? Like, did you submit something or did they just reach out to you?
I approached them the first the year before last was my first year at Van Meter, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My first
and
year
that's
at the
Van
festival.
Meter in Iowa. For people who don't yep. know, there's the Van Meter Visitor.
Yeah, which is like a pterodactyl. That's mm-hmm. that's usually how I describe it to people. It's like a large pterodactyl with a light on its head. It's got a horn that lights
horn.
Up.
Yeah.
It's very unusual. If you've been playing Legend of Zelda, you could probably relate the glowing horn to half the monsters in the game, so it's easy to wrap your mind around it. But I'd gone to the festival and I just saw their official banners and stuff were just black with white text, and I'm like, that's not good.
Oh,
you need the monster on there.
Yeah.
And so I started working out like I'd be happy to draw it, and everyone seemed very excited about my previous year's illustration. When I approach a monster festival, my goal is to draw a new version every year, partially to get the same customer to come back, but you know, flex my own skills, get better at what I'm doing,
yeah.
and you know, make something new and improved every year. And so the 2022 one, I wanted to dissect bits of the storytelling a little bit.
Okay.
I can't remember which day of its sightings off the top of my head, but somewhere during its sightings, it was seen on a lamppost and they
yes.
shot at it with some shotguns. So that's like the scene I was trying to capture with that. And I have it on the lamppost. It's got some wounds on it. But as the story says, the shotgun did nothing. So there's mm-hmm. it's more like a scuffs. On
yeah.
his body. And then, you know, looking at the original concept stuff, a lot of the sketches that were submitted to newspapers are pretty crude. They heavily imply that like pterodactyl form
right.
And so I was trying to pull it more towards like give it a hyper masculine body. This thing's ripped because it flies
right,
and
it's
so it's all upper body, it's all arm day and
wing day.
And then I brought in a little bit of like Rodan from Godzilla and tried to give it a new take. I mm-hmm. didn't want to stick too close to pterodactyls because I was afraid then that's all it would look like.
Right.
So I tried to look at the original art and then look at other monsters that I felt had some relationship to it.
I love it. Very cool. All right. So let's get back to your comics. Tell
yeah.
us about that. Like this,
oh,
that's
boy.
What you do, right? Like that
yeah.
is your day job.
I mean, well, it's that's why I had you introduce me as an illustrator. I am sort of branching away from comics because what I do as a day job is art. So
right.
that could be I draw like Dungeons and Dragons characters for people. I drew
mm-hmm.
your podcast thing. I work on comics. I go to schools, teach kids how to make comics. I draw on Twitch. So there's a lot of different hats I wear. When it comes to being an artist, I'm trying to embrace the word illustrator a little bit more than just
okay.
comic artist. But no, that's a great question. My creative career really kicked off in 2016 when I was like, I'm going to make a comic book. I thought I was going to make a zine. I had a friend who was very enthusiastic about zines. And I'm sorry if you hear some scratching. My dog's getting comfortable.
No, it's all right.
He was very enthusiastic about zines, so I took some sample artwork to my local comic book store, and they were like, it doesn't look like you want to make a zine, it looks like you want to make a comic book, so do that,
mm-hmm.
and have it ready for free comic book day, and we'll do a big launch.
Oh, really?
You. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's like 8 months away, so I was my zine idea was going to be an anthology piece of like every 4 to 6 pages I change characters and we never go back to the one we had before, and they're all like little weird quirky things with like
okay.
some people have superpowers, some people don't, maybe it's supernatural stuff. And so I took the 4 that I was already working on. I was like, I'm gonna make a whole comic book out of this, and
yeah.
my initial goal after that was to do a graphic novel. I wanted to do like 150 pages all at one time, and a lot of my friends were like, whoa, just do
slow
one
down.
Issue, because then if you screw up and only do one issue, at least you got an issue done instead of just having like 20 pages of a graphic novel that didn't get finished. And so I did that, and I had a big Kickstarter. We raised $3,500, and it sort of felt like, you know, the world was my oyster for a little while there.
Yeah.
However, you know, things go back to normal pretty quick. And so I'm wrapping up that series, and it's called Champions, and it follows four different plainclothes superheroes in my hometown of Sioux Falls. There's monsters. If you like creepy clown stuff, that's the primary monster, is just a horde of evil clowns. And I'm also dealing with a lot of issues of like, how do you be the best version of yourself and work together? Mm-hmm. And so all of these characters have different wants and needs. And the way they want to achieve them doesn't always mesh with how the other people are being forced to work with to overcome these issues. It doesn't always mesh. And so that's sort of the storytelling I'm going for. I've got a little bit more of like a Kevin Smith style okay. thing, where it's more about the conversations, a little less about the action, although I'm working on the last like 8 pages and there's a lot more action at the end. But the entire goal when I set out to deliver a theme on it was doing the right thing isn't always easy. So that was the theme. And I'm not sure if I can say for certain if that theme stuck, but one of the secret tricks about a theme is as you write something and you're thinking about what you want to say, when you get to the end, if you didn't say that, you can change what you said you were trying to say to match more what you made. So
there's
probably going to be some differences towards the end. And it's taken me a long time because I've had to do other work to get the ball rolling on it. And so I was doing about an issue a year. Then the whole world shut down. So I took a break. And then I was trying to figure out when was best to get back on top of it. I realized I had 2 books left because it was going to be 6. And I just wanted to put it all together as a graphic novel it was intended to be. So I did a Kickstarter. We raised $10,000. It was absolutely bananas. It was outrageous. And so now the book is being prepared for a fall release. We're hoping around October.
Okay.
The only thing that's hanging it up right now is printing. We aren't quite ready to print, and so they can't give you a realistic due date until you hit the go button, so it could change.
Okay.
But
well, that's exciting. It's looking good. A lot of money.
It is a lot. Oh my goodness, it was the craziest March of my entire life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I remember sharing the link and you were like so close when I shared it. And then
we were close for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's great.
A lot of what I do is grassroots. Like my biggest way to reach out to people and talk to them is I do a Substack newsletter. I find social media is really difficult for my psyche, so I try not to do too much on there, even though I'm scrolling all the time, and that's the problem for me.
Right.
So like Substack's a big thing for me, which I've really only started getting into in the last like 8-9 months. And other than that, it's doing events, like meeting people like you at Van Meter, going to places like Rhinelander, Wisconsin for Hodag Festival, going to Comic-Cons. Yeah, we had a great time. I loved it. It was maybe one of the best like hang out with other creator times I've had in my career. It was really fun, especially because, you know, we were in a loud place that wasn't necessarily the best
spot.
So for
people
who don't
know and didn't see like his newsletter or like our posts, we, you know, spent the day at the Hodag Festival in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, and then Lisa Russell from Cryptid Comforts, she set like a date for all of us to hang out afterwards and have dinner at this loud Wisconsin bar with, you know, tons of taxidermy and a guy playing acoustic guitar.
And just motorcycles outside.
Motorcycles. It was right on the lake and this like log cabin looking bar, but it was so fun. We're all shouting and like trying to get to know each other.
I still think one of the reasons why it's going to be memorable is that we stuck it out and we made a good time out of what we were all like, oh, was this a bad choice?
Right.
And I think that makes it way more memorable.
Yeah. So it was fun. And you know, when we do these events, it's so cool because it's like you know these people online and then you finally get to meet them in person. It's like it's just so cool. I love that. So
yeah, it's I've found when I go to like Comic-Cons, there's hundreds of people there doing artwork, like dozens, if not hundreds of guests. So just so many creators. that it's hard to even figure out who you want to like hang out with, let alone is it going to be someone that you actually want to spend your time with.
Exactly.
And at the monster shows, I find that practically everybody is really awesome.
The whole community is just amazing.
So I feel less cautious about just saying, yeah, I'll go out to eat with a bunch of people I don't know when I'm at that show, because not just Hodag, but any monster festival, because everyone seems way more like
supportive.
Supportive, that's a good word. Yeah.
Not competitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I totally get that. And you know, I've heard that many times before, like with other illustrators, just saying, you know, everyone has each other's backs and everyone's so supportive, even though you're doing the same thing. You know, basically, right. You know, you're all just making art, you know, and the same for podcasters, like you know, we get along great with everyone else in the community. So it's just, you know, nothing but love.
Right. And I think that's really fascinating, because I'm going to reveal my stance. I'm not personally convinced by a lot of the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And I've come to embrace that. I'm definitely enthusiastic and supportive. And so if you go check out, like, if people go check out the newsletter that we were talking about, it's called I Don't Believe in the Hodag or something like that. And but there is a time of year where it's real. And I think there's this amazing thing we can do as like communities. And like that's really becoming a part of my focus on these particular creatures. Like I see young people who feel weird and ostracized and outside, and mm-hmm. where they're like, oh, I can latch onto this monster that's also a weird outsider. It's like me. And there's so much power there that I like in those instances, mm-hmm. of course the creature's real, like, come on.
Right.
And so I think that there's that sort of like identity, like mm-hmm. so we're being supportive because of all this like positivity that's around these creatures right now. There's nobody who's being a gatekeeper, mm-hmm. which I could see a world where that could happen, and maybe some monsters have some gatekeepers. But when I go to Comic-Cons, like if I haven't read the latest Spider-Man, then I don't count.
Right.
And, which I haven't read Spider-Man since like 2002. So
I think it's time to end this conversation. No, just kidding.
Oh no.
But yeah, it's definitely like that. And then also, it's all about the storytelling too, you mm-hmm. know, and that's, you know, whether you believe it or not, it's just a great story.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, especially people, like very few people claim to have seen a Hodag, because it's agreed upon that it's likely not real. But I've had people approach me and say that, you know, they've seen the Visitor, so that people have these these impactful moments, and I don't want to deny the experience someone's had. So I also think that's fascinating. There's a lot of room for building folklore and urban legend. Like when I was really little, I lived in a very small town, and there was a house that someone lived in, but it wasn't in good shape, and we all thought a witch lived in there, right?
Right, of course.
And so, like, even just those things, I think there's a lot of power in that, mm-hmm. and, like, transforming those things into stories we could share, whether you want to become a creator and, make comics, movies, TV shows, stuff like that, or if it's just sharing the stories about, like, our lives and our experiences, I think that's a phenomenal thing, and so that's one of the big things I'm, like, here for.
Yeah. I love it. So have you had any experiences growing up?
Are we talking like paranormal stuff?
Paranormal or, sure. you know, have you seen a cryptid?
I don't know if I've seen a cryptid.
Okay.
I wish I could make a claim to that. I have had an experience, which we'll get into in a second here, but I remember, so when we opened this up, I said growing up in South Dakota, there weren't a lot of monsters or paranormal things. We had there's all these historical signs all over the state, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are boring. It's like, here was a farm that mattered at one point, and kids don't
no
care.
One cares.
But there was one called the Sioux Serpent, because I lived in Sioux Falls, and the sign was outside of Sioux Falls. And it claimed that when people were building bridges along this particular part of the Sioux River, they saw a gigantic snake easily 50 feet long. And I'm like, well, there we go. There's a monster. But like, other than that sign, no one talks about it.
Right.
So I feel like, I mean, I don't think it's festival worthy, but I feel like there's something there people could be talking about. Mm-hmm. But the experience I had was near that area. I had a summer where I was dating somebody who was very enthusiastic about going ghost hunting. So we did that. We were bumping around what do they call it? A cemetery, but it's a pioneer cemetery. That's the word I was looking for.
What's a pioneer cemetery?
So a lot of times pioneer cemeteries are no longer used for new incoming bodies, but they are preserved cemeteries from people who lived in the area when it was still being settled. So these would all be like late 1860s to like 1900. When it comes to South Dakota, the further east you get, the older they're going to get. But so we're walking around in there, we're doing a bunch of recording, but I'm also like, I had been reading things like the Mothman prophecies all summer.
Okay.
And so I'm like, we're getting close to John Keel's witching hour. And so I was watching the sky, and we did see several illuminating objects appear in the sky when we were leaving the cemetery. So we began to chase them.
Oh.
And we pulled over, and I think it was like seven of them. They were these bright, like yellow orange lights in the sky that sort of just popped into existence and then traveled in towards the like southeast, northeast. I'm trying to remember the story exactly. And then they just slowly stopped existing. So while this is happening, there are three of us in the car. We jump out. We're like, I'm freaking out. And the other two, my girlfriend and one of my friends, they were a lot more calm than me, but I'm like losing my mind because I'm seeing something we don't understand in the sky. And like, that was a big deal for me. So I was an avid listener of Coast to Coast for a long time. I just don't stay up that late anymore. So I knew exactly who to call. I called New Fork, the National UFO Reporting Center. I can't remember the guy's name who runs it, but he answers, and he's so tired sounding. He's like, is this a UFO thing? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you file it on the website. And he like hangs up on me. I'm like, oh my God. So we get home, and I'm pretty sure it was the next morning. Type out this entire long description. So if you go to the New Fork, the National UFO Reporting Center, and go to like 2010 and go to like Brandon, South Dakota, you can find my entry. I'm happy to send you the link if you want to share it.
Yeah, I want to share it with everyone.
It was definitely a moment. Now, I really don't know what we saw. We did take steps that we were recommended by New Fork. Like we called our air traffic control tower. They basically couldn't tell us anything unless we did a Freedom of Information search. I didn't want to spend any money to do that. So we didn't do that. And then we did report it to Bigelow Satellites. And I don't know.
So these lights, were they in some sort of formation? Were they just around the sky?
They weren't willy-nilly. They were all like in the same direction.
Okay.
But they weren't like in a V or in a straight line, but they all traveled in the same direction. So that we had inklings of like, is it flares? But we didn't have any. I'm pretty sure it was clear that night. It would be in the report. It's been over 10 years now, but we didn't see any airplanes or hear any airplanes. We'd been outside the whole night. Part of me was like, is it Chinese lanterns or like paper lanterns? But you would have seen them going up.
Were they going fast?
They were going fast enough where we could clock their movement, but they weren't like speeding.
Okay.
So like our car on the gravel, we were maybe going like 45, 50.
Okay.
They were probably going, and I can't gauge how far away they were or exactly how big
it's
they were.
So hard,
they're in
yeah.
the sky. But I would guess they were probably going about the same speed.
Okay. And you didn't hear anything?
No, but okay. I specifically, and so I don't know if I could even get a hold of the two folks that were with me. I haven't spoken to them in years. But I was so excited that I don't know if I could have focused on what I was hearing.
Right. And no one took any pictures?
Yeah. No, this was still like the early days of Android. But I think I still had like a razor, and maybe I did try to take a picture, but it's like, oh, cool. Black sky, black picture. Doesn't matter how bright the spot in the sky is. I know one of us had an Android and I don't remember which app we were using, but we were using a satellite app. A satellite and stars app to see like, is it ISS? No, it's not. Is it a known satellite? No, it's not. But yeah, that was in the days where like one person in a friend group having a smartphone was pretty common. And
right,
give it like 4 years, we all had them. But yeah,
and plus like, is this all pixelated? So
yeah, and we went out there with ghost hunting equipment, and so grand unified theory sort of stuff, where like we're looking for one thing, we find another thing. It was
right.
It was an interesting night.
And that's awesome.
I became tremendously paranoid afterwards because I'm like, we reported this to a lot of people, we made a bunch of phone calls, is someone going to follow us around, you know? And reading the Mothman prophecies, and like every black vehicle's an MIB sort of thing, it's things are going to get weird. And we did have people like sharing weird things with us, like potentially MIBs or people who weren't quite people, stuff like that. And I don't think I kept really good record on all those things. It was just more like fuel to the fire for that whole wild summer.
That's crazy. So is that Sioux Falls?
Yeah.
Serpent, was that your legend, or is there anything else?
I was going to say, there are other things in that part of the world that people don't mm-hmm. talk about a whole lot, because they're a lot of them are part of native cultures, and I do my best not to appropriate or misappropriate anything. But one of the ones on the west side of our state that I think is fascinating is called Walking Sam. You could lump it into like Bigfoot mythology, but it's more of a man and it's very tall mm-hmm. and sort of in the like the big friendly giant way from the book. These creatures may rip you out of your rooms if like windows are open and stuff like that. Sometimes they're reported to wear clothes and like have extremely tall stovepipe hats and stuff like
So how tall are we talking here?
Anywhere between like 12 to 20 feet.
Okay.
So a lot bigger than your average Bigfoot if you're going to lump it into those categories.
Right.
And again, they were ascribed a lot more human behavior, a lot less discussion of like hairy things, but more like a big horrible man that comes and like snatches you. I find those legends to be pretty interesting. I've spent very little time on the west side of the state, but the time that I'm over there, it's a place that especially for looking at like the Sioux tribe around Rosebud and the Black Hills, a lot of that stuff is still sacred land that's being mm-hmm. misused if we're going to look at it appropriately. And so there's a lot of legend and stuff around there that isn't even brought into typical like white culture.
Yeah.
So if you just take the time to go speak with those people who live on the reservation and stuff like that, there's a lot more that they could tell you that
I wish
I had the tools to know, because I am rarely over there. But seeing the vastness of the open spaces, you know, things like the Badlands, where you just have this like sweeping desert suddenly.
It's so beautiful there. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. There's so many places where it's clear that like any shifting or movement could create some sort of story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm amazed that the thing that people associate with it is jackalopes, when there's so much more out there.
Oh my gosh, I went out there 2 years ago and we went to Waldrug, and nothing but jackalopes, and they were expensive. I really wanted to get one, but oh my goodness. Yeah,
when I was a little kid, we took a trip to the Black Hills, like my first trip out there, and my parents always had like so much money that we got out of like a change jar that was my sister's mm-hmm. and my spending money. They'd split it in half, so it'd be like, I don't know, $80 or something, and that'd be your whole trip. And I thoroughly spend it all every time in the first place we stop, you know, I'm gonna buy a bunch of stuff. So we stopped in Waldrug, and I bought like a coon skin hat and like a pop gun and a bunch of cowboy stuff mm-hmm. and it was like, woo, I'm all kitted out. And then we got to like Lead, and there's all these fossils and museums about dinosaurs, and like I wasted my money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I remember thinking Waldrug was super cool as a kid, and it's it's a place to stop. I'll go with that. But there's a lot more interesting spots to hit in South Dakota than that.
Yeah. Have you been to the active woolly mammoth dig site?
It's very outside cool. of Mitchell, is that right? Or is that in Hot Springs?
I think it's Hot Springs.
I've been there. It would have been when I was pretty young.
Okay.
So we're looking at like 20, 25 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
I don't have the strongest memories of it. I think we spent like an afternoon there, but I remember that being pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. You ready for some rapid fire questions?
Do it.
Okay. Have you stolen anything?
Yes. Do I have to explain it?
Yes.
Oh.
Just tell me what it was.
No, I've stolen candy.
Okay. That's enough. What movie do you enjoy quoting the most?
Ooh, that's tough. Maybe The Godfather right now. You ask me that question in 6 months, it'll change.
Of course. What is your favorite breakfast food? And don't tell me you don't eat breakfast.
Oatmeal right now.
Plain oatmeal or like brown sugar?
I've been learning to enjoy it plain because it's good for me. And so trying to find ways to embrace that. Sometimes I'll add like a little yogurt, some cinnamon or something, but usually it's straight up. If we're going to go like all out and go crazy for breakfast, it would probably be something with lots of eggs and like pancakes. You know, give me a grand slam.
Slam.
But if we're talking every day, I've been getting into, you know, treating myself appropriately with oatmeal.
There you go.
Learning to appreciate that. Man, what an old man answer.
Okay, who was your first celebrity crush?
Whoa. My first celebrity crush.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Christina Aguilera.
Okay.
Maybe. Man, I'm not exactly sure. I don't live in like the celebrity crush world anymore. I did for a little while until I was like 16, 17.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We'll go with her.
Yeah.
What world record do you think you have a shot at beating?
Ooh, world record that I think I have a shot at beating. Oh. I really don't know. Maybe the amount of miles spent driving for a specific state's arts council. I'm gonna pick South Dakota right now. That's a weird world record. It's very neat.
That is.
And I think I could do it.
You could
win. I might already have it. I could be wrong, but I'm getting close. I've done over 35 residencies throughout the Midwest at this point. So I think I think I'm at 36 or 37, and I've got 3 more coming up this year. So
okay. I think you want it. Yeah. Toilet paper, over or under?
Well, over.
Okay. That's the right answer.
Yeah. I think there is only one answer to that.
Do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, it's a taco.
It's a taco.
Yeah. I recently saw an infographic on it viewed all portionings of like bread or carbohydrates in a handheld food as in respect to the sides of a cube, and so it showed that like on a taco you've got the left side and the right side and the bottom.
Okay.
And so the hot dog and taco were in the same category, which also put like pigs in a blanket and sushi in the same category because you have like the meat and the carbohydrates around it. So I'm going to say it's a taco because I like that right now. But otherwise, I would be in camp sandwich, but now I'm in camp taco.
Camp sandwich, camp taco. Okay. So do you consider a Pop-Tart just like ravioli?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a fruit ravioli, yeah.
All right, last question. What was the last band that you listened to?
The last band that I listened to was probably, it was yesterday. It was probably Real Big Fish.
Nice.
I'm a big, we talked about this. We've talked about this
before, yeah.
I try to take Mondays and Tuesdays to do writing and stuff like that. So I usually need music on because podcasts, they distract me. I wind up typing whatever someone's saying. And that doesn't help.
So. All right, awesome. Jacob, Dylan, where can people, I was reading your name, where can people find you?
So that's a tricky question. So what I've been trying to tell people is I'm gonna use one of those like new link sites. Bio.site/Dylan Jacobson is the place to find all my stuff. Otherwise, if you just want to see like client work and my resume, DylanJJacobson.com, it'll also link you to all my links, you know, in one of those spots as well. But I'm just now beefing that website up because it's that time of year where I'm getting new work, getting new clients. So there's a lot of cool stuff on there. When I do figure art, I'm not afraid to show people's full bodies. So I do have a specific website for that, that, you know, it separates it from the things that schools and kids see, which is Brimstone Studios, which is my official business title. So if you're into edgy stuff and like characters with horns and people who might not be wearing all their clothes, go check that out over there.
Instead of like the Pokemon.
Yeah, right.
What kind of events are you going to be at next? Where can people actually meet you in person?
Well, I'm going to be at, give me one second, I'm going to pull up my website.
Pull it up.
Because you think I would have this stuff memorized, but I just,
no,
I,
sorry.
Yeah, I just can't have it memorized anymore. So I'll be at OComicCon in Omaha in July, on July 21st through 23rd. That's my next big one. And then I've got the Art Collective coming up in August. I think I've got more stuff going on before that, but that's in Sioux Falls. That's August 18th and 19th. Mothman Festival's after that. And I'm still filling stuff in. I know that I just, before Art Collective, I booked the Dubuque Art Fest, the 5th and 6th of August. So that'll be a good time. And then Mothman Festival in September, September 17th. Then we've got Van Meter Visitor Festival in September 29th?
Yeah, 30th.
And then SuperCon around the same time. That's in October. That's my hopeful deadline for the comic book champions to get the whole series out. So that'll be good.
Awesome.
So I'm still booking stuff. Again, my website and my Facebook and stuff, they tell you where I'm going to be pretty much all the time. And I'm on the road a lot. So
yeah. Well, it's been great having you tonight. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. Well, with me, I should say.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I'll make sure I send you that link to the New Fork article so people can read that. Tell me if they think I'm as crazy as I think I am.
So. You're crazy. No, just kidding. All right. Well, have a great night and thank you again.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Subscribe and review our pod wherever you listen. We have merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. See you later, creeps.